Good day, everybody out there in the podcastosphere. This is the Then and Now podcast. I'm your host, John Shomo, and we're about to embark on episode number 18 here in the latter stages of June 2024. The first segment we'll do, as usual, is facts of the week, if you will, anniversaries, birthdays, past events that have gone on in the coming week. Then we'll tackle some current topics, and finally, we'll do our Three Good Questions segment. Three Good Questions might take on a little bit different of a look this week. We'll try a couple of different things, and we'll see. We have an email address if you want to drop any comments or submit any questions to us. Please go to Three Good Questions, that's T-H-R-E-E, Three Good Questions, at gmail.com. That's Three Good Questions at gmail.com. Okay, let's get to it. First of all, events for June 26th. On June 26th, 1977, Elvis Presley gave his last public performance. It was done at the old Market Square Arena in Indianapolis. He passed away less than 2 months later. On June 26th, 2003, the first choice in the NBA draft was out of St. Vincent St. Mary's High School in Akron, Ohio. LeBron James picked number one by the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2003. In 2015, the United States Supreme Court, in a 5-4 ruling, held that same-sex marriage is a legal right across the nation. That was June 26, 2015. A few birthdays for June 26th. One is even now considered to be maybe the greatest female athlete of all time, Babe Didrikson Zaharias, born June 26, 1911. In golf, she won 10 major championships in the LPGA. She won 2 Olympic gold medals in track and field at the 1932 Games in Los Angeles. One was the 80-meter hurdles, and one was the javelin throw. And she played other sports. She would have been good, softball, baseball, you name it. Still one of the greatest, considered to be one of the greatest female athletes of all time. Actor Chris O'Donnell will be 54, June 26th. The captain, the former captain of the New York Yankees, the Hall of Famer, number 2, Derek Jeter, will be 50. And Ariana Grande will be 31 on June 26th. Moving on, June 27th. This is a complicated one. It'll take a minute or so. On June 27, 1984, those of us who like to watch football, this is an important day. The United States Supreme Court ended the NCAA's monopolistic control over college football telecasts. There was an antitrust suit brought by the universities of Oklahoma and Georgia challenging the NCAA's rule that a team could only be shown on live television a total of maximum 3 times in any regular season. That was frustrating as a fan, particularly an Ohio State fan, growing up in high school and college and after college there for a few years. You could only watch the Buckeyes live on TV a maximum of 3 times during any season, and you knew one was going to be that game at the end of the regular season. And other fans of other colleges, I'm sure, felt the same way. That ruling ended that, and it began what we see now, what results in every single game in college football, FBS certainly, is on television somewhere, be it one of the major networks or cable or streaming. They're all telecast live now, it seems, which is better for the consumer. The colleges figured wrongly that if all the games were on TV, it would hurt attendance. You know, I don't think it's hurt attendance in the last 40 years. Just saying, it's really a great thing for us fans, and a good U.S. Supreme Court decision there. A couple of birthdays for June 27th. Bob Keeshan. I don't know if that name rings a bell to you. If you're of a certain age, it might. Born on June 27th, 1927, he played longtime character on CBS in the mornings, Captain Kangaroo. Yes, Captain Kangaroo, where I learned how to tie my shoes and spell Massachusetts and all of those things. So happy birthday, Bob Keeshan. Would have been 97 years old. The other birthday for June 27th, a former presidential candidate, independent candidate in both elections in the 1990s, H. Ross Perot, the billionaire computer guy, who actually got almost 20% of the vote in 1992 when the candidates were President Bush and Governor Clinton. H. Ross Perot, born June 27th, 1930. All right, June 28th in 1776, the final draft of the Declaration of Independence was submitted to the Continental Congress. The draft was put together by a five-member committee, mostly written by Thomas Jefferson. He was helped by Adams, Franklin, Livingston, and Roger Sherman from Connecticut. On June 28, 1914, Franz Ferdinand, heir to the throne of Austria-Hungary, was assassinated as he and his wife rode through the streets of Sarajevo, now in what was then Yugoslavia. That was the event that triggered World War I and the steps, all the countries mobilized, etc. That was what caused or triggered the war. In less than 2 months, the entire continent of Europe was at war with each other, it seemed, just because that one guy, not even the ruler yet, had been assassinated. 5 years later to the day, I don't know whether this was accidental or on purpose, the Treaty of Versailles was signed in the Palace of Versailles near Paris. That was June 28, 1919. The U.S. never ratified that treaty, as you may know. On June 28, 1965, President Lyndon Johnson authorized the use of American ground forces in Vietnam. That was a very fateful decision, both for tens of thousands of young men who wouldn't come back, and for the political career and the future of President Lyndon Johnson. King Henry VIII, born on June 28, 1491. Some birthdays, a couple of guys who have been around a long time here. One of my favorite comics, actors, movie guys, Mel Brooks, will be 98, still around, on June 28th. Go watch a few of those Mel Brooks films from the 1970s. Those are great. Chuck Howley, former Dallas Cowboy, former West Virginia University Mountaineer. Chuck Howley will be 88. He just went into the Hall of Fame a year or so ago in Canton. Chuck was a linebacker with the Dallas Cowboys, and we'll get into this a little bit more in the Three Good Questions segment, or in the Three Good Questions segment today. Chuck Howley is the only player in Super Bowl history to have won the MVP award in a game his team lost. He was the most valuable player in Super Bowl V, which the Cowboys lost to the Baltimore Colts 16-13. Happy birthday to Chuck Howley, one of the greats. This next guy I don't want to talk about too much. I'm a Browns fan. John Elway will be 64 on June 28th. There, I said it. And the last guy I don't want to talk too much about either, Elon Musk, will be 53 on June 28th. Okay, moving on. June 29th, President Eisenhower signed the Interstate Highway Act into law on June 29th, 1956. What a great thing that's been. He got the idea from when he was riding around in Germany at the end of World War II. Hitler, as you may know, had built a kind of superhighway to move his military around in Germany called the Autobahn. And Eisenhower saw that and thought, wow, we really need that in the United States to move. And he was concerned about military stuff, but also just to get people around. And so we started building interstate highways. That's why if you drive from Talmadge, Ohio to Myrtle Beach, it only takes 12, 13 and a half hours, something like that, instead of 24 or 25 hours like it used to, going through all the little towns and diners and things like that along the way. Three birthdays for June 29th, the late slugger of the Minnesota Twins, Harmon Killebrew, the Hall of Famer, born June 29th, 1936. He was originally from Idaho. Guy that just passed away this year, sadly, Richard Lewis, was born June 29th, 1947. One of my favorite comedians, an Ohio State grad, 1968, graduate of the Ohio State University, was a great friend of Larry David's, appeared in a lot of things with him, including Curb Your Enthusiasm. We're missing Richard Lewis. Also born June 29th, Kawhi Leonard, 33 years old on June 29th. Won a title with the Spurs in 2015 and won a title with the Toronto Raptors in 2019. Plays about half the time these days, it seems. He'll be 33. Okay, moving to June 30th. On June 30th, 1970, the Cincinnati Reds christened their new ballpark right on the Ohio River. It was called Riverfront Stadium. The christening did not go well for the home team, as Henry Aaron and the Atlanta Braves crushed the Reds 8-2. That was the Big Red Machine, the beginning of their great run in the 1970s, but they weren't great that night. The Braves got them 8-2. 2 years ago, on June 30th, Ketanji Brown Jackson was sworn in as a member of the United States Supreme Court. She is the only nominee to this point to make the court by President Biden. Birthdays on June 30th, Mike Tyson, a controversial figure for sure. He was going to fight some idiot this summer, but he's got a little bit of an injury, and the fight was postponed until fall. That's how closely I follow that. Mike Tyson will be 58 on June 30th. Michael Phelps will turn 39. Michael Phelps won 23 Olympic gold medals in swimming, obliterating all the records that came before him. He's going to be doing swimming analysis, I'm sure, over in Paris for NBC. Happy birthday to Michael Phelps. He's a great American in spite of the fact of the college he went to. Okay. Last but certainly not least, on June 30th, Joe Mazzulla will be 36 years old. You may have heard of Joe Mazzulla recently, the former West Virginia Mountaineer basketball player, head coach of the world champion Boston Celtics. Yeah, that's right, Joe Mazzulla. Happy birthday, Joe. I'm sure it's going to be celebrated widely in New England. Okay, July 1st. Lots of important stuff here now. The Battle of Gettysburg began July 1st, 1863, as the Confederates came in from the northwest. And there was some fighting in and around town to the north and west of the city. And it began the three-day Battle of Gettysburg that was probably the turning point of the Civil War. On July 1st, 1898, the Rough Riders, led by Teddy Roosevelt, charged up San Juan Hill, or Kettle Hill, depending on which historical viewpoint you read, in Cuba. That was July 1st, 1898. The original Comiskey Park on the south side of Chicago, 35th and Shields, opened on July 1st, 1910. The St. Louis Browns shut out the Chicago White Sox 2-0 that day. Those White Sox were pretty good, unlike the 2024 version. Cleveland Municipal Stadium held a grand opening with fireworks on July 1st, 1931. Right down on the lakefront, the old barn that we went to so often as kids to watch either the Indians or the Browns, Cleveland Municipal Stadium. On July 1st, 1932, the Democrats at their convention in Chicago nominated the governor of New York as their presidential candidate. His name was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I think they made a wise choice. The 26th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified and went into effect on July 1st, 1971. That's the amendment that lowered the voting age from 21 to 18 in the United States. It was the fastest from start to finish ratification for any of our constitutional amendments. It only took about 3 months to do so. Why? Because in 1971, guys were still coming home dead from Vietnam, and they hadn't even been old enough to vote for the people who sent them over there, and nobody could argue that, really. So the voting age is now 18. Birthdays on July 1st. Sam Ratigliano will be 91, the former head coach of the Browns in the late 70s, early 1980s. Always liked Sam, had a great sense of humor. His teams were usually pretty good. Boy, if they hadn't called Red Right 88 there in that playoff game after the 1980 season, he might have been Super Bowl coach Sam Ratigliano. But happy birthday, Sam. Debbie Harry, lead singer of Blondie. This is going to make you age. Debbie Harry is 79 on July 1st. Yikes. Dan Aykroyd will be 72 on July 1st, the original member of the cast of Saturday Night Live. He's been in a lot of great films, Canadian by birth. One of the great women's basketball players, another great female athlete, Nancy Lieberman, 66 years old on July 1st. The late Diana, Princess of Wales, was born July 1st, 1961. She died tragically in an auto accident in Paris in 1997. And actress Liv Tyler will be 47 on July 1st. Her dad's kind of famous too. Played in a band called Aerosmith. All right, finally for this week, we'll go over the events and birthdays of July 2nd. On July 2nd, 1881, President James A. Garfield was shot and wounded as he walked through a train station in Washington, D.C. The treatment that he got medically was a farce, a sham, a tragedy, and he died 79 days later of the wounds and of the lack of competent medical treatment that he received. That's hard to believe, I know, but I've seen a special on TV about it, and there's a good book about it. I wish I remembered the title. His doctors were completely incompetent, and that's such a shame. Garfield had such promise. He was just in the early months of his presidency, too. On July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her flying companion Fred Noonan disappeared while flying over the Pacific Ocean. They were never seen or heard from again. On July 2nd, 1964, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law that had been proposed by President Kennedy a year earlier, and he also signed a new Voting Rights Act into law, both of those on July 2nd, 1964. Birthdays, July 2nd, include the late great Thurgood Marshall, lawyer turned Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, born July 2nd, 1908. Medgar Evers, civil rights worker in Mississippi, assassinated in 1963. He was born July 2nd, 1925. Founder of Wendy's, Dave Thomas, born July 2nd, 1932. NASCAR's great, maybe the greatest of all time, Richard Petty, the King, will be 87 years old on July 2nd. Mentioned him earlier when we talked about previous birthday. Larry David will be 77 on July 2nd. And Margot Robbie, who played Barbie, among other things in the movies, Margot Robbie will be 34 on July 2nd. All right, moving on to our topics, our current event topics this week. Sadly, we lost Willie Mays since the last podcast. Willie Mays died of natural causes at the age of 93. He was almost universally considered to be the greatest living baseball player. I don't think anybody really even argued that, to my knowledge. He was the ultimate five-tool player, and for those maybe unfamiliar with that terminology, the five tools are hitting, hitting with power, fielding, running, and throwing. He could do it all and do it just about better than anybody else. Saw Willie Mays one time. As a kid, the only time I ever went to Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, my parents took us, my sister and I, to a game in August of 1969 against the San Francisco Giants. It was a Sunday day game after a Saturday night game, and Willie was getting on in age a little bit, and they sat him that day. But he was up down behind the Giants dugout signing autographs before the game. I didn't run down there or anything. I probably wouldn't have got close to him. That's the only time I ever saw Willie Mays in person. But I think something important happened. His death took place the same week as the game that was the Major League game from Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama, last week that was televised nationally on Fox. And during the pregame show for that game, just, you know, 36, 48 hours after Willie had passed away, Reggie Jackson gave an answer to a question by Alex Rodriguez that I think everybody should watch. Find it on YouTube. Look it up. It was surprising. It was kind of shocking. The censors let him talk instead of blocking out a word or two that they could have, and I think that was a good decision. It's a history lesson for those of you who may not be familiar with what a lot of those Negro League players had to put up with. Remember, Willie Mays was 17 when he joined the Birmingham team in the Negro Leagues, and Reggie Jackson, 20 years later, playing minor league ball in the A's system in Birmingham, related some of the stuff that he had to go through, and I use stuff advisedly. I could say some other things. It's really important, I think, for people to understand what those guys went through and what happened to them. He credited some of his future A's teammates, guys that he was playing with in Birmingham, Reggie did, for helping him get through that stuff. But it's powerful. It's history. Take a look. Look it up on YouTube. Okay, we'll get to a question that kind of pops up now that Willie is no more with us. We'll get to that during the Three Good Questions segment. Okay, the Stanley Cup Final is done. The Florida Panthers won the Cup with a 2-1 win in Game 7 on Monday night at home against the Edmonton Oilers. Florida won the series 4-3. A Florida player was not named winner of the playoffs MVP award. That award in hockey is known as the Conn Smythe Trophy. The Conn Smythe Trophy was given to Edmonton's Connor McDavid, who probably was the best player in the playoffs, if we're going to be honest. His team didn't win. Some folks were surprised, which leads to kind of a discussion, and a bunch of us on a text thread were talking about it late on Monday night. Are there any other players from losing teams that have been named like the MVP of the finals or something like that? Remember, that in hockey, it's a little different. It's MVP of the entire playoffs, which is four rounds and lots of games. And really can't argue with the choice of Connor McDavid there. It's happened six times now in the National Hockey League that the winner of the Conn Smythe Trophy was not on the Stanley Cup winning team. The other three sports have only seen one instance each where the MVP of the championship game, Super Bowl, whatever it may be, did not play for the winning team. Let's go down those one at a time. The previously mentioned Chuck Howley of the Dallas Cowboys was Super Bowl V MVP. He had two interceptions, one fumble recovery, one sack in the Dallas 16-13 loss to the Colts. Chuck Howley played his college ball at West Virginia. He's the only Super Bowl MVP from the losing team to this point. In Major League Baseball, there's been only one World Series MVP from the losing team. That was in 1960 when Yankees second baseman Bobby Richardson, with 12 RBIs and a .367 batting average, won the MVP award in spite of the fact that the Yankees lost that series 4-3 to the Pittsburgh Pirates, which ended very famously on Bill Mazeroski's walk-off seventh-game home run at Forbes Field. But Bobby Richardson, still alive, by the way, so is Chuck Howley. Bobby Richardson was MVP of that World Series. In the NBA, it only happened one time, and the recently departed and very much missed Jerry West, also from West Virginia University, by the way, was voted MVP of the 1969 NBA Finals. The Lakers lost in seven games, the seventh game being 108-106, to the Boston Celtics. That was Bill Russell and Sam Jones's last game. That was 11 titles in 13 years for those Celtic teams. In those finals, Jerry West only put up these numbers: 37.9 points per game, 7.4 assists per game, and 4.7 rebounds per game. And as the Celtics were walking off the court and in their locker room and being interviewed on ABC after the game, you can also look this up on YouTube, they were asked about Jerry West, and they were just in awe of the guy. Sam Jones fouled out of his last game trying to guard him. Red Auerbach said, "Man, I'm tired of having to, you know, have our team deal with Jerry West." Bill Russell was player coach by then, but Red was kind of running the show behind the scenes in terms of player acquisition and so forth. He was incredible. He was kind of star-crossed in that he couldn't get by the Celtics. He finally won a championship, an NBA title in 1972 when the Lakers beat the New York Knicks, and then he retired as a player. So there they are: Chuck Howley, Bobby Richardson, Jerry West. All right, last current event topic will be the upcoming, as we record this, debate between President Biden and Donald Trump. That will happen Thursday night, June 27th. As you listen to this, it may have already happened. Who knows? There are different rules from any presidential debate that any of us have ever watched over the years, and I've certainly taught a lot about them in my teaching career, watched a lot of them. The rules are different. Here are some of the rules that will be implemented in this debate. One, if it's not your turn to speak as a candidate, your microphone will be muted. There'll be no shouting over each other like we've seen in previous debates. Two, there will be two commercial breaks. There never have been commercial breaks during debates, but during those commercial breaks, no one, their staff, or anybody else can interact with the candidate. They have to stay there by themselves and not interact with their consultants, if you will. Three, there'll be no formal opening statement given by either candidate. They'll get right to questions asked by a couple of journalists. Four, they're not allowed to have any props or pre-written notes. They'll be given a blank notepad and a pen or a pencil. No props or pre-written notes, as we said. And there'll be no live audience in the studio. I think that changes, and I think that's a good rule. I think that changes the environment a little bit. you don't have to see these candidates playing up to the people that are in the room. The audience is those of us watching on television. So those are the different rules from what we've seen before. I really have no prediction. I will say this. I think the Trump people are kind of making a mistake. They're downplaying Biden. They're saying he's an old man and he can't do all of this stuff and he won't be very good. That's not how you handle this stuff. You try to overestimate the other person's abilities. And I think Joe Biden will do fine, I mean, you know, relatively speaking. But I think he'll certainly outperform the low expectations being set for him by the Trump people. And I don't know why they would do that, really. But I don't know why they do a lot of things. Okay. Now we get to the three good questions segment, and we're going to do this a little differently this week. If you have a question, again, please send it to threegoodquestions, T-H-R-E-E spelled out, at gmail.com. Okay, the first one we'll tackle, we're going to leave for you guys to answer through the email address. Jeff Cole, who just returned from England, Scotland, Ireland, got to play St. Andrews, pardon number 17 and 18, which I think is a big achievement. Jeff asks, in the last 40 years, only four PGA golfers have won six tournaments in a season. How many can you name? Well, we'll give you one. Scottie Scheffler just did it. He won his sixth tournament of this season this past weekend in Connecticut. There are therefore three other PGA golfers have won six tournaments in a single season in the last 40 years. This is since 1984. How many of those can you name? If you can name any or all of the other three without looking them up, folks, don't look them up. That's cheating. Send your guesses or answers in to threegoodquestions@gmail.com. Okay, the last one, and we'll also open this up to responses at the email address. Who is now the greatest living ball player? I've seen a lot of discussions and taken part in a couple of them myself. And it's really now a very difficult question, I believe. Partially made difficult because of the steroid era. Barry Bonds is not on my list. I'm not going to put Roger Clemens there or any of those guys that are known steroid users. You can if you want. I'm not going to do that on mine. But who is now the greatest living ball player? Not greatest active ball player, but the greatest living baseball player. Email us your answer at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. I'll be interested to hopefully get some different perspective on that through this question. So there you go. Again, if you have a good question for the podcast, please send it in to threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That ought to do it for this week, ending June and beginning July. We'll get back at you next week for our holiday 4th of July edition, if you will, of Then and Now. I'm John Shomo, always grateful for your choice to listen to us. Thanks a lot for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, everybody.